I am mining investor and editor of Resource Stock Digest, Gerardo Del Real, here with my partner, Mr. Nick Hodge, who's also an investor and the publisher of Daily Profit Cycle. This is the 340th episode of our weekly therapy session that we call Investing in Bizarro World. We're going to talk markets, gold, silver. It's up, it's down, it's sideways. Talk record high copper prices. We're going to talk uranium. Man, lots to get to. Before we get to it, Mr. Hodge, how goes you this fine afternoon, sir?
I'm doing well, Gerardo. I have to wish you a happy birthday, which was this week. So maybe the readers can chime in some comments and offer you the same wishes. Happy birthday, sir.
I appreciate it.
Look forward to seeing you in New Orleans this coming weekend and next week for the New Orleans Investment Conference, where we will both be speaking, presenting, leading exhibit hall tours, meeting with companies that we've recently financed, maybe financing and could finance in the future, and then catching up with companies that we either recommend or hold shares in. So I'm looking forward to that. It's good to be with you again live on this Thursday afternoon. And that reminds me, next week, we'll not be live, as we'll be in New Orleans. We will record this for you next Wednesday evening, and we will send out the recording on Thursday. So just a little bit of housekeeping there. But other than that, I'm having a great government shutdown. How are you?
I am well. I'm thankful. The wife had a multitude of celebrations planned for me, right? We did a friends party here this past Friday. We had a family party on my actual birthday yesterday on Wednesday, the 29th. Appreciated the effort. Appreciate the kind words from you and everyone else. I'm great. I'm thankful. I'm healthy. Allergies aside, I'm excited for New Orleans. It's, as many of you know, my favorite conference. When I first got into this business, I actually attended that conference on the retail side of things, paid for my ticket, paid for my room, paid for, you know, everything that goes along with being able to attend and listen to the lineup of just amazing speakers and just get different viewpoints and meet different groups. And so that was a transformational trip for me. It really, you know, got me curious about this junior resource space. And here we are, you know, some 16 years later, up and at it, and thankful to be able to be on the other side of it and speaking and sharing some of my ranting and raving with the fine folks that are out there. So if any of you are out there and see us, please, please, please drop a note, say hello, say hi, we'll buy you a beer and talk shop.
Yes, sir. You know, that talk, it's kind of crazy. Hasn't changed that much. You said 16 years. I've been there. I think this is 12 years in a row, starting in 2012. And, you know, some of the mantras or the themes that are often discussed there seemingly hadn't come to fruition, right? We had been in a commodities bear market until the past couple of years. And then up until this year, now it's really accelerated, right? Where, you know, years ago, we were given presentations about being the Green Barons, and somebody's going to have to provide these critical metals for the energy transition and emissions reduction. And the market sort of yawned for a couple of years. And lo and behold, here we are, 2025, the year of our Lord. And I literally can't keep up with the announcements coming from national and international governments, bodies, institutions, organizations, think tanks, etc., calling for and opening their checkbook for that very thing, critical metals, right? So plenty to talk about. I think it's going to be a good conference, and we can maybe peel some of that back in this next 40 minutes or so.
Yeah, here. No. Let's get to it. Listen, I wrote an editorial for Daily Profit Cycle, and I started it by saying, in the words of the great poet Kendrick Lamar, it's not enough. Uranium supply, it's not enough. Mm-hmm. Copper supply, it's not enough. So I want to get to that here because we truly are, and I don't want to overuse the word transformational, but it's a transformational time in the commodity space, man. Governments around the world are all in. Scott Bessent, Treasury Secretary, came out and said it's all hands on deck in the uranium space. Got to talk gold, got to talk silver. Let's start there, and then we'll get into the $80 billion deal that was announced in the uranium space that's specific to North American uranium. So listen, we told you the last couple of weeks to buy the dip in the uranium stocks and the equities. We've been telling you for the past year and a half, and frankly, we've been telling you for the last 5 years to get positioned in the space, that it was a matter of when, not a matter of if. We're seeing that now. With gold and silver, it was delightful. My contrarian heart smiled when gold pulled below the 4,000 mark, and for whatever reason, the crypto bros take like joy in that. I still don't understand it, right? There's more than one way to make money. I don't understand why you either have to make it in gold or in crypto. I don't know why you can't do it in both, but everybody was talking about the demise of gold and how it had topped and how it had peaked. And like, you know, now it's going back to $2,000. So my contrarian heart smiles when Jim Cramer gets on Twitter and says, this is it. Like, it's time to rotate, you know, into tech stocks again. Like, that's where it's at. It's an AI. It's an NVIDIA. And maybe that is the case. But I'll tell you this. Gold was a hell of a day today, up some 2.5%. Firmly above the 4,000 mark at 4,025. Silver up some 3% at the $49 mark. These are spot prices. If any of you think that this was the top in the gold and the silver market, you're in for a rude awakening. We may have consolidations, and that's all this is, in my opinion, is a healthy consolidation of two metals that, you know, the price, frankly, got ahead of itself a little bit. With that being said, the factors that led to that overrun are still in play. Central bank buying, government buying, hedge fund buying, institutional buying. And we haven't got to the part where retail really rushes in. Ownership of gold in the average person's portfolio that also owns equities is near historic lows. It's perked up recently, but it's still near historic lows. So when I look at where we're at there, it tells me we have a lot of runway. I would love for you to provide the technicals. We talked last week about the technicals and the support that existed there. But what does it look like to you? And what are your thoughts on where we are in the cycle?
I mean, you say... sort of some of the things that, you know, I've heard Rick Rule say over the years, just simply reverting to the mean in terms of precious metal and precious metal equities, equities ownership is going to lift this market much higher than it has gone and than it currently is. And the other thing I'd say before I talk about these technicals is that I mentioned earlier, just 5 minutes ago, the billion, multi-billion dollar announcements that are coming. You mentioned $80 billion announcement. I just got to point to the entire size of the market cap of like the TSX or the TSXV or just the size of the metals market in general. These are huge numbers that are getting thrown around in some cases, you know, greater than the entire market capitalization of all the critical metals companies in the world. So I get that some of it's going to go into existing producing companies and some's going to go to other measures, right? But nonetheless, these are huge numbers that are floating around. And you said it, the fundamentals haven't changed. So, and these are the technicals. What you got this week was a thoroughly expected rate cut from the Federal Reserve, a quarter point. And then you got a little bit of hedging, right? Which is what we're digesting in the market right now. You know, the quote, I don't know what the quote was, but something like, it's like kids asking for ice cream, right? Like maybe you won't get it on the way home. He said, you might not get your rate cut in December. It's not a foregone conclusion. And what happened is, you know, after these last two Fed rate cuts, bond yields have ticked up. So you've got the 2-year at a 1-month high. You've got the 10-year at, I don't know, a 2 or 3 week high. And that's what gave pause to the gold price, which you can see here on the right side of the chart where it dipped below the line that I showed you last week. I didn't move either of those lines. The short-term support is up around 4,000, which is what you're now consolidating around. The wider fear in the gold complex was that it could potentially go down to, you know, 3,600 is the next line down. That's just longer term support. That's not end of the bull market. That's not hell is here and everything's over. That's just a pullback to long term support inside of a bull market. And it didn't do that. You can see that gold wants to consolidate around that $4,000 level. And that's exceedingly healthy. I expect that what you're seeing in the bond market in terms of rising yields will abate in due course as we approach the December Fed rate meeting. And you'll see rates start to soften. You know, they're playing this game with the government shutdown and not getting the data. I think they'll have plenty of cover to cut again. We just got a 3% in inflation report. I think it was 3.0 or 3.1, something like that. You'll likely see that soften as we head in towards the end of the year. I'd remind you that oil can't get out of bed and is one of the largest inputs to inflation and consumer costs out there. And despite Russian sanctions and Chinese buying and this, that, and the other thing, like oil can't break out into a bull market. And I would expect that to lead to lower inflation in the coming 4, 6, 8 weeks. And that will give the Fed room to cut again. And that'll, for me, the way I'm seeing it, lead to the next leg up in the precious metals complex and a reversing of that rising interest rates that I just laid out for you. So hopefully you were using this opportunity to buy the dip. I was writing recently in letters that I had raised the buy under prices of some companies that we had been in a long time because they had gotten so far ahead of themselves. Yep. I mean, the complex was overbought. So the prices of these assets, junior miners, whatever you want to say, were up here. And I just raised the buy unders to here because it was only logical that a correction or a consolidation like this was coming. And now you're getting opportunities at those levels in all sorts of names that you and I write about. So similar for silver, similar for PGMs, dissimilar for copper, which really hasn't consolidated. It hit all-time highs in the past 5 days since you and I flicked on this podcast. So lots to like in the hard commodity space for sure.
Look, JP Morgan had announced that it was forming a $1.5 trillion investment fund that was created to strengthen U.S. national security, right? And amongst that $1.5 trillion that was going to be spent was a pretty healthy allocation for natural resource stocks and critical metals, natural resource supply. And so Perpetual Resources just secured $255 million in new investment from JP Morgan Chase and Agnico Eagle.
That's a big mining company, right?
Yeah, it is now. Not so much so the couple when we visited a couple of times back in the days, and we're yelling at everybody that the salmon is actually why the mine would end up being permitted and the antimony was going to be the key to getting it across the finish line. And yeah, it took a decade, but you know, it's proved to be a very profitable insight, even though we were early, right? So clearly the capital that's coming into the critical metals and the precious metal space is not hot money. It's not money that's coming in and then just going to make a U-turn and leave, you know, the sector in the next year or two. There is a very proactive, coordinated effort by the U.S. government and private corporations and public corporations to really move this forward. And I think, you know, I always say that my brain works in weird ways, but when I look at AI and I look at the rush, you know, to build these data centers, and I look at all the announcements with Google, and then I look at an $80 billion deal with Westinghouse to build 8 different nuclear reactors, right, using their technology in the uranium space. All of it's interconnected to me. And I think, you know, I think private business has done a very effective job of sitting down with the White House and explaining to it that there is no way that we are even on a playing field, let alone a level one, with China in 5 or 10 years, if we don't get really, really aggressive. And the bottom line is Nick Hodge and Gerardo Del Real didn't need government subsidies or a coordinated, you know, all hands on deck, as Scott Bessent said this past week, approach to critical metals for us to try to do well for ourselves and subscribers, friends, and family. But it sure fucking helps, right? Sorry for cursing, but my God, it sure fucking helps. The amount of capital that's coming in is going to continue to come in. You have to, and I'm going to sound like a broken record like I did last week. Folks, you have to continue to find value, and you have to continue to be very strict with what you're buying and why you're buying it. I read your letter earlier, Nick, and I love the fact that you talked about raising the buy under prices last week, you know, to make room for new purchases or topping off positions during this brief consolidation. It worked out beautifully. You played that perfectly. And, you know, I think with 2 or 3 of those companies, it literally touched that buy under. You could have got in there if you just set your limit and bounced right back up. So well done. Tip of the cap to you, sir. But no, look, I say all that to say it's a bull market. Copper, brand new all-time highs. Gold, silver headed higher. Money, sustainable money. A lot of sustainable money is coming into the space. It's going to be a fun couple of years, folks.
Yeah, I mean, procrastination feels good until you realize you're only fucking yourself. And that's what it's like masturbation in that respect, right? So that's what the U.S. government.
It's gonna be the title of this podcast. Don't fuck yourself.
That's what the U.S. government has done, right? So going back to the last sort of rare earth spat, which was 1415, you mentioned 16 years ago when you first came into this space, that was a kick the can moment. That was a, oh shit, we have a problem, but we're not going to really do anything about it. And we'll just continue to be reliant on the Chinese and hope everything goes well. I think that's changed this time, right? For a lot of reasons. One, it's been 10 years. There's not a lot of options left. You've got this trade war going on. Relations with China have deteriorated in the past 10 years. You had the advent of what you said, the AI and the data centers and soon to be the quantum computing. And you had the procrastination. Like I've talked about this a million times, the setting of climate targets and not meeting them, kicking down the road. Labeling metals as critical, but continuing to have red tape and not permitting them and continuing to have NIMBYism, not in my backyard, in the United States, which is the reason we got ourselves here anyway. We were content to export the emissions and the pollution that came with processing these minerals to Asia. And that's now really starting to change, which is sort of what you said. You've got real money coming in now. You mentioned the $80 billion for uranium. I guess I'll start there. Like we were already going to be in a
supply deficit.
I mean, supply deficit without these new eight reactors. And I don't suspect these will be the last eight reactors. And oh, by the way, like China's still building, and Japan just got a new conservative prime minister who's doubling down on nuclear energy on down the line. Google had an announcement in the past week with NextEra Energy, which is the largest utility in the United States, to restart a reactor in Iowa. That's going to need uranium. And on down the line, right? And the I think it was the EIA, the energy... the EIA, Energy Information Administration, had said earlier this year there was going to be a uranium shortage anyway, and now you're just exacerbating the problem. That commensurate with that $80 billion announcement was that, you know, Trump and the United States, they want a 4X nuclear by 2050. So whatever the shortage was, you know, I'm doing multiplication with my fourth grader right now, whatever the shortage was going to be before, multiply it times four, right? Like that's what it's going to be. So, and then there was two other big announcements in the past week. So from all over the globe, right? The U.S. and Orion Mine Finance with an O, not AU, Orion announced $5 billion critical metals fund. And then Appian and the World Bank announced $1 billion. So, and that's on top of the JP Morgan announcement that you kicked off the segment with. So lots and lots and lots of money. And I know you want to say something, but the last thing is there's not a lot of quality deposits of this stuff out there.
And the quality ones are going to command a premium. I wanted to talk about that Orion Abu Dhabi fund because that was interesting to me. The last couple of weeks, including yesterday, man, that seemed it was a long day. But yesterday, I was talking with the CEO, and we were planning to do an interview and just talk. And he said, "Well, I'm actually on my way to Saudi Arabia." And this is maybe the third time in the past month where I go to speak to a CEO of a natural resource company. And we have to work around the fact that they're traveling to Saudi Arabia. So the Orion announcement and how active the Middle East, and look, they've been very vocal about the fact that they absolutely are going to allocate, and when they say big capital, it's big capital, folks, to the critical metal space. And they want to develop, you know, their own, what I'm calling government resource banks, right? And so to your point, that's going to continue. And yes, $4,000 seems like a high gold price when you and I, Nick, have seen $300 gold, right? But there's never been this kind of capital and liquidity in the world chasing a similar amount of gold. Obviously, more gets mined, but it gets consumed for jewelry, for investment purposes, and wealth preservation. You know the routine. So, look, copper, I think, is headed to $7 in a hurry, like in the next year or year and a half. Uranium, I think it's headed to $150 in the next year, year and a half. Maybe 200. Gold and silver. I don't want to crystal ball all of them, but I think silver goes to 100. I think gold goes to 5,000-6,000 here in the next year or two. And again, we don't need that to find value and to find good deposits and good companies. And I'm excited in the premium portion of it because one that I've been waiting to mention and I hadn't mentioned because we hadn't got the final box checked off on a permit that was already issued. It's finally official and the drills are finally turning there. But anything North American with potential, a solid management team, a good asset that can be developed with a halfway decent structure. You don't even need the best structure in this market. We have that conversation with our mentor every week. And even he admitted the other day, he said, look, in this kind of market, you can get away with not having the best structure or the tightest structure if the asset is good enough, right? You can get away with not having the A team on the management side. Now, if you can find the A team and you can find the great structure and you can help guide that, like we try to do with a lot of the newer companies that we help finance, then yeah, it works out a whole lot smoother and there's a whole lot more upside. But in this market, there's a lot of value out there and you have to look for it. But like you said, Nick, there's also a lot of garbage out there that dresses up really pretty in bull markets. And that's a part of why I love New Orleans. We get to get out there and really vet the companies. And, you know, we're bringing our talented cameraman and audio video whiz Tim with us, our CFO be with us. And I absolutely can't wait to get out there and feel the energy of this market. We haven't had one like this before. So it should be a very, very productive, fun time out there.
Rolling deep like Adele. You know, Saudi Arabia has made minerals, resources, hard assets a main part of their growth for the next part of this century. It's obviously their wealth is built on oil, but they're smart like the Chinese. They plan in decades and longer, and they've been clear about they're going to open up the Arabian Shield to exploration, and they've already started issuing exploration licenses and doing partnerships. Is one reason, a freebie of the day, you know, I'm invested in Ivanhoe Mines. Mr. Friedland's no dummy. He's been over there kissing the ring or the whatever it is, the sheik or whatever, you know, he's been over there multiple times, bowing, curtsying, doing all the things, right, to be able to explore that unexplored land. And that's, you know, one of the areas that new assets, new production could potentially come from. You mentioned New Orleans. I did want to briefly run through what we're going to be talking about there, because I think it's beneficial and we can follow up on it in subsequent podcasts. And next week, as it has been for the past couple of years, you're going to get our workshop at the New Orleans Investment Conference as this podcast. So, and I expect there'll be and are a lot of new investors into the space. So starting the very first day of the conference, I'll be giving, along with Mr. Jeff Phillips, a Junior Mining 101 boot camp. And that's basically going to be me asking him how he evaluates a company. And I would expect he would talk about...
He's going to start with share structure.
Share structure, what's good, what's bad, red flags, people... jurisdiction and knowing why you're invested in a project, right? Like, I'm not done putting together the slides yet, but, and Rick talks about this a lot as well, Mr. Rule, like know why you're buying a stock and what the catalysts are and be very specific and explicit about that. Like don't buy a Silver Explorer because you think it's going to be the next great mine.
Think silver is going up, right?
Right. You shared a brilliant report with me when we first started partnering up about the number of, or the percentage of exploration targets that, you know, actually turn into mines. And it's less than 1%, man. So your goal should be like outlining a resource or making a discovery or, you know, putting together a PEA or an FS or this, that, or the other thing. Anyway, I'm starting to get long in the tooth, but you shouldn't be talking to an exploration company about like building a mine, right? Like, anyway. We'll put up some of those red flags and some questions that you can ask to field score, which is how you look at an animal in the wild. You field score it, you know, while you're watching it to see how big its antlers are or whatever. And there's things that you can do to field score it because it's hard to do from the field when you're 500 yards away or whatever it is. We'll tell you how to do that with junior mining stocks. And then I'll talk about the senior way to invest in junior mining, which is the title of my talk. And that, of course, is private placements, which we've been pounding the table on. And we're not going to stop pounding the table on because the track record has been so good. And as we explained last week, This is one of the ways to be able to invest in companies, assets, and teams that the market hasn't had a chance to bid up yet, either because the asset has been private or it's been halted in a CPC or it's about to be vended into a new shell or company that's going to start trading. And as gold has gone from whatever, 1500, 2500 to 4000, and copper's gone to $5, and you've seen these ETFs, GLD, GDX, the copper ETFs, you know, multiply. I think GDXJ is up over 100% this year. Private placements is a way to invest in those assets, you know, without the marketing haven't had a chance to, to bid them up. And so, I'll talk about, you know, why that's advantageous, how you can invest in those private placements. And I'll run through, some of our track record. And that relates to the previous question or the previous point I was making, like, how do you evaluate a company about the share structure and the warrants and the fully diluted? So, plenty to talk about in New Orleans. And then you and I, of course, will, break out into a workshop and give this podcast as we typically do. And that I'm sure will involve, evaluating some companies that we financed recently and talking about what we're seeing in New Orleans and maybe making some calls or some prognostications. I recall, last year we were telling you that the Doge wasn't going to bite very hard. And here we are having, just crossed $38 trillion in debt, and the Fed's Fed's about to end tightening.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about Jerome, right? So Jerome cut 25 basis points, and you know, we touched on him briefly, but and then got up there and did what he always does. He double talks, right? He said it's not a foregone conclusion, as you mentioned, that there will be another rate cut in December, which I found really interesting because there were two dissenting members. One didn't feel a rate cut was appropriate. Everybody else thought it was appropriate. And one person even thought a 50 basis point cut was appropriate. So I'm looking and I'm like, how many governors are there? 12? Is that the number?
I don't know.
Let me make up a number. But the bottom line is, if all but one thought it was a good idea to raise.
Seven. Siete.
Siete. Excellent. So out of the seven, right? Let's do math now again. So if out of the seven, six thought it was a good idea to raise, one thought it was a good idea to just keep rates where they're at, and then within those other six, one of them thought it was a good idea to raise at 50 basis points. You're telling me that I shouldn't assume that there's going to be a rate cut in December? Okay. I mean, it's going to have to get real bad out there for that to happen. And again, much like the capital that's coming in from private companies, public companies, and government, we don't need a rate cut, frankly, to sustain these gold prices or these silver prices or these metals prices. They're not predicated on that. It just makes risk assets that much more attractive because of the liquidity that comes with cheaper capital and the people that are able to access it. So look, it's this space, it's early. There's a holistic doctor that I meet with every couple of months just for random checks, do some blood work and make sure allergies are not too far out of control. And, you know, I'm not over exercising or what have you. And he's amazing. And, you know, he knows what I do for a living. And he said, well, sounds like I missed the run, huh? I see gold's at record prices and silver is pretty high making record prices. I'm going to have to look for something else. And I said, well, look, I don't want to tell you what to look at and not look at. But if you're talking gold and silver and you think you missed the run is just getting going. Yes, the price is run, but there's a lot of good value out there. And back to your private placement comment. Look, there's a company right now. We worked behind the scenes with this company that, you know, we're helping finance probably for a month and a half or two, at least going over the structure of the financing, allocating who gets to participate in that financing, who's going to own those shares. Should those shares be locked up for a year? You know, all of the things that you do behind the scenes that aren't sexy to people and most people don't see, but is a part of the reason why our track record has been what it's been with private placements. We get very, very hands-on. Who we don't want to come into the placement, right? Who are you marketing with? And look, some people take issue with the fact that we do a little bit of everything. Yes, we own multiple businesses, folks. We market. We have a publishing company. We also privately invest, but be absolutely clear. The bulk of our capital right now for both Nick and I comes from the checks that we write into these companies. So yes, if I am talking about a company, yes, I am biased. Yes, if I'm willing to write a check, my hard-earned capital, into a company and help guide, you know, the business. Absolutely, I want to help tell the story because I think we do an effective job of it and we have an enthusiastic audience. If I think that company then merits the attention for paying subscribers, right? Paying subscribers to actually be presented that idea and make their own mind about it. Yes, it can become a recommendation, but look, if you don't have to do it that way and you don't have to like that business model, but believe you me that we are extremely biased when we talk about a company, write a check for a company or help tell the story of a company. We're biased because we have skin in the game, right?
Yeah. And just to close the loop on Jerome, and then I want to hit on what you were just saying. It was funny, you know, before he opened his mouth, there was a 90 some percent chance of a rate cut in December. He opened his mouth, it went to 60 some percent chance of a rate cut in December. 24 hours has elapsed and we're back over a 70% chance of a rate cut in December. So and then on to skin in the game. Yeah, take it or leave it. We're not twisting your arm, but a lot of folks like the fact that we eat our own cooking, that we have skin in the game or we invest in the things that we're writing about and recommending because it brings us closer to those companies and it gives us a vested interest. If that's not your cup of tea, great. There's plenty of newsletter writers out there who don't own the equities. And I wonder, you know, how that's good for you as an investor. Sort of the same with, you know, an analyst that might be with a brokerage house that, you know, financed the company, that's covering the company because they did a brokered financing. And that's really the point I wanted to make. We've done a lot of these financings and most of them are non-brokered financings. So Gerardo just mentioned some of the boring behind the scenes stuff. There's lots of brokered financings out there where a brokerage house will take the entire pie and then try to resell it to their clients and others. And they're making money on fees and other things, not necessarily by buying the shares for their own accounts. And that's sort of the difference. We're buying the shares for our own accounts by and large. And so the game has changed in the past 5 years, not just because of us. There's other folks that are doing it.
Sure.
But we can now raise significant amounts of capital. And with that comes exactly what you were talking about, having a seat at the table to get better terms for those of us, for those folks, investors, subscribers, members who are in our group and invest alongside us. Whereas when you get an email from John Q. Investor from his beachside chair in Hawaii or wherever he is, you know, that's different, right? He's just issuing you the brokered financing that his firm is reaping fees from. So, and you could parse it out more than that. There's more to talk about. I'll talk about some of that in the presentation I'm giving, that senior way to invest in junior miners. But that's what Gerardo and I are talking about when we're talking about skin in the game, having a seat at the table, getting advantageous terms, making sure the structure is sound, making sure the company is financing itself in a way that can lead to success for the majority of the shareholders and not just the insiders who have the cheapest paper, all that sort of stuff, right? So at any rate, that's what we've been trying to do. And dare I say, we've been successful in some respects.
Yeah, no, and we've been mostly successful, especially the last couple of years. And yes, we've had a better market this past year and a half to cook with, right? But it'd be absolutely clear, everybody's not getting those types of returns. And it's because they're not putting in that kind of work. The last point I want to make, and then I'll kind of put a bow on it, is we don't take fees when we offer these private placements to our subscribers. Be absolutely clear, folks. We don't get a kickback. We don't take options. We don't do any of that stuff. And so our only interest is to make money off that check that we're writing when we're writing a check, and to make sure that our friends, family, and subscribers, when they write a check, have the best shot at return of capital and a return of capital multiples in multiples, right? That is like the only goal. And again, the track record speaks for itself. The new deal that we have lined up is look, tier one jurisdiction, major JV partner, large land package, discoveries all around it, tiny market cap, great share structure, and introduced to us by a gentleman that we've known now for well over a decade and closer to two decades, that we've made a lot of money with in the past. So that checks a lot of boxes for us. Private placement intel, folks, that should be out to you here in the next couple of days. So keep an eye on your inbox. Mr. Hodge, you have an update on Spokane. Anything else you want to get off your chest before we go there? Because I always, I know which way it goes when we have an update on Spokane. Anything on the natural resource side or anything else that you want to say that we haven't covered? I think we covered most of it. Right?
That was pretty good. I look forward to seeing some of you in New Orleans and reporting back from there. And the new private placement Intel deal will be out in short order. The Bizarro update. You know, I've been very less triggered over the past couple of weeks. I see lots of folks triggered out there, manufacturing things to be triggered about. Believe me, there's things out there that aren't great, you know, wars and famine. And I feel bad for these folks who might have their benefits expire at the end of the month, because I realize that's part of some of the system. But at the same time, I'm not out there shouting from the rooftops or the Twitter tops or losing my hair or anything like that. And, you know, I just think that nature is healing in some respects. So if you've listened to this podcast for the past year, 12, 18 months, I've chronicled the Spokane homeless problem pretty damn well. I've been vocal about it on Twitter. I posted some videos. I went and spoke at a city council meeting, got some great feedback from that. In a nutshell, we voted to ban homeless camping over a year ago. The mayor and the city council said, fuck you voters. We ain't doing that. We're compassionate and they need services. Let's cater to this homeless population. The majority of the folks who went to the meeting back in June said, that's the dumbest shit idea. You remember this conversation. I ordered a hamburger and fries. You're giving me a hot dog and tater tots.
And telling you it's a hamburger and fries.
That's right. And they had already done studies showing that these folks didn't accept services, yet that's the course of action they pursued. Guess what, Gerardo? It didn't work. Guess how many people accepted services since they passed that bastardized law in June? Take a guess.
How big's the city?
It's this fucking many, Gerardo. Zero fucking people accepted services. The police chief lost his shit. He said, we can't enforce this shit. You passed a law that said they only got to move a foot down the past the sidewalk and we can't cite them. We're like, what's going on here? And then the business community got very boisterous. I told you there's a small business owner that's suing. Yep. And then the Spokane mayor invited the ex-Boise mayor to have a tour of the city. I think she thought he was going to say some positive things. He took one look around and said, what the fuck are y'all doing? You guys aren't criminalizing public drug use? You're letting these people sleep in the sidewalks? Like, we have to have basic minimum standards. No fucking shit. And so then what happened this week? A bill sponsored by every single city council person to make homeless camping illegal has been signed by the mayor. Maybe you should have just done the fucking will of the people.
Praise Jesus, Nick. Praise our Lord in this time of need. Wasted a couple of years. Property tax increases, I'm sure, happened because you've said they have. I'm sure tax increases.
Sales tax increases.
All of the things, right? All to get back to square one.
That's it, man. And that's the problem with government, by and large, not just in Spokane and not just with homeless.
Yeah, agreed. Couldn't agree more. I think that's a great part to end with and get into the premium portion of the podcast, because we got, you know, a little bit to fire up there. I am Gerardo Del Real, along with Mr. Nick Hodge. This was the 340th episode of Bizarro World, Investing in Bizarro World. Have a great one, folks.
See ya.